You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, joining me live from the United Kingdom is Alison Reeves. Alison is an astrologer who focuses on goddess asteroid and centaur chart readings. She was born in Johannesburg and left at 18 to get away from apartheid. At 44, she is the project manager of Anankara Crisis House, modeled on Soteria House in California for 7 years. She has been a creative therapist in a hospice for 3 years, and today, as an astrologer and poet, she offers Chiron Astrology Workshops with horse whisperer Amanda Oates. She's also led Sacred Isle tours and celestial events around the world at sacred sites. In her own words, she is a, quote, queer astrologer, but she will work with everyone who wants a queer perspective in life. So let's welcome this queer lady to the show now. Hi, Alison. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm very well, thank you. It's 3 a.m. in the morning here.
So oh, my
I'm wide awake.
Wow. Are you in your pajamas?
I am in my pajamas by the fireside.
Oh. Well, thank you for staying up so late. I had no idea it was going to... I knew there was a time difference, but I really appreciate you being up and ready for this show.
Oh, well, I've been to sleep, and then I've woken up again. So.
Well, good. Thank God for that.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's very exciting to be in touch with America.
Oh, yes. And here we are talking to England, and jolly old England at that.
Yes.
I could easily go off on a tangent about England, but let's stick to what we know about.
Okay.
I was curious about your goddess asteroid and centaur chart readings. What does that... I've never heard of that before. Can you explain that a bit?
Okay, well, there's... Between Mars and Jupiter, there's a big asteroid belt. And in astrology, this asteroid belt and the bodies in that asteroid belt are really important for us making this big shift in consciousness at the moment, which basically, in the way I like to think about it, is we bring our individual selves fully and completely into the collective or the global mind. So there's lots of healing often that needs to happen in that. Mm-hmm. And there's also the reintegration of the goddess asteroid archetypes for men and women. And I say Chiron. My pronunciation of lots of things is a bit strange.
That's all right.
So Chiron, the wounded healer, really develops our empathy and compassion with other people who've been through the same or similar experiences to us. So they're all really interesting astrological bodies, and they definitely seem to be coming more and more active in everyday human consciousness. So, you know, there's lots of astrologers working with them in the world. You know, it's about reintegration and becoming more whole, I guess, the balance of male and female energies in the world. What we essentially want is a takeover of the right brain.
Right. Well, it does seem that there's a need for the right brain, of course, because we've been ruled by the patriarchy for so long. And it seems that those people who are now more or less in control of the world don't have much empathy or compassion. If anything, it's quite the opposite. They're rather cold and cold-blooded, I would say.
Well, it certainly appears that way. I mean, the one glimmer of hope was seeing all the leaders at Nelson Mandela's funeral, when they all seemed, you know, very open to Mandela's kind of approach to politics, which if they all had that approach, there'd be no problems in the world at all, would there? So, but yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons why it's kind of quite urgent, really, for people to come into their creative power is we can't sit around waiting for the people at the top to catch on.
Right.
Right. We have to, you know, start making changes in our own lives and in our own communities and building the kind of projects we want and, you know, the kind of new structures we want to support a much more global vision of peace. And it's quite interesting that in the last couple of years we've had Uranus squaring Pluto, and when those two planets were conjunct, that was in the late 60s, and there was a very strong vision then of peace. You know, there was a big movement for women's rights, for gay rights, anti-war movements, and now we're at the square. The square, the waxing square, is about taking control and the need to kind of get hold of the steering wheel. You know, otherwise we just get we just kind of go with the flow, not particularly anyway. So we've got to kind of make a stand in a way and start to manifest the things we want. I mean, I'm not one for doing the anti things so much because it works against the law of attraction.
Right.
We have to do what we want to see in the world rather than protest against it, I feel.
Right. Right.
So then we stand more chance of success, and we stop kind of polarizing.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because
Well, Michael Tesserian, I was just watching a video by him, and he was reflecting about all of the rebellion and the protests . And he basically says that all of your efforts to be different have really led you to be the same, and nothing has changed. And all of that time spent trying to resist has really created a situation that is persisting. And so it seems to be a waste of time to fight the big fights that, you know, we all want to change the world. I mean, I was raised
Definitely.
In the 60s, and, you know, I was a love child, and I definitely, you know, wanted peace and love and drugs and sex, and I had my share. I mean, probably more than my share, but anyway, here we are at the bookend of the 60s, and it doesn't quite feel like there is an urgency. It's almost as if people have been hypnotized or brainwashed into a kind of hypnosis or complacency.
Well, I think that's true. And, you know, there's a global machine designed to kind of do exactly that through media and just kind of numbing us down, really, to mm-hmm. our aliveness and our spirit. But it's pretty easy to reverse that. We could simply spend more time in nature. And I think the global structures will continue to crumble as they have been. And definitely, just for example, the total solar eclipse coming up, that's kind of swinging over the crown chakra of the British Isles. It does feel like a portal of really new beginnings is coming through. But even as an astrologer seeing that, you know, sometimes it's really just hard to hold the vision of hope for the world, because we have been through so many disappointments, I guess, and tried so many things. But I think the classic mistake we make as human beings is we work against the laws of nature often, and that's why we don't succeed.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
And part of the article I wrote about the wonders of mushrooms and mycelium is that I think if we copy nature, you know, if we stop feeling like we're the superior beings on Earth and actually look to other forms of nature that are very adaptable, you know, the thing with mycelium is they cooperate, they take nutrients to other plants, they clean the environment. So we can learn from nature how to be cooperative, because we've been educated, especially in the West, we've been educated not to be cooperative and to just focus on our own success.
Right, right.
Rather than the success of the human, you know, human beings as a whole and the success of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a quantum leap to make. But in some ways, it's very simple what we have to do.
Yeah, right, right.
If that makes sense. The solutions, I feel, are simple and they're well within our reach. And maybe the key is actually to stop expending our energy fighting and expend our energy focusing on doing something wonderfully creative in the world like you are.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, it really is a big difference of between looking outside yourself and seeing what's out there that you don't like and don't want, and then losing yourself in that. You can go really deep down a conspiracy tunnel, and there are plenty of them going on right now.
Yeah.
Or you can go within and find the creative element and nurture and heal yourself, because everybody has some aspect within them that is fractured or fragmented or that requires healing and nurturing. And that really is, as I see it, the big task right now is to reassemble our parts and to balance the male and female within. And that's when the light goes on, when, you know, the right side is equally active or more active than the left. Because the left brain doesn't really get us anywhere. I mean, it's useful for some things, but it's really not a very practical tool for spiritual evolution.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it's not really a practical tool for very much.
Right. So, maybe for arguing.
And yeah, for arguing.
Right.
And causing conflict, yeah.
Right, right. Beaches
but, yeah, I mean, I came across this book recently. It's by a very well-known neuroscientist in Britain called Ian McGilchrist, and it's called The Master and His Emissary. And basically, he's putting forward the argument that the master should be the right brain and the left brain should be its emissary. So the left brain, of course, is vitally important to being a human being. But I think when we do achieve this right brain takeover, you know, we become very inspiring, and we see problems in a way that we understand the causes and effects of them, and we come up with amazing creative solutions to solve them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's in a way, it's kind of inevitable that if there's enough of those inspiring people around, you know, who's going to want to follow the boring politicians anymore?
Right, right. That's basically lying through his teeth.
Yeah, and not actually providing any solutions.
Right.
You know, there's an election coming up in Britain, and they're having this radio interview about, you know, how they're going to have this TV interview with these politicians. They've left out a number of key ones from Scotland. You know,
whoa.
So you're off to a bad start already because
involved
everyone. And then they're talking about, well, they're just going to talk over each other, and, you know, and they're like a group of unruly, naughty children.
Yes, yes, I agree.
But they haven't really even develop the social skills to, you know, listen and debate in an intelligent way. And I mean, I pray every day that that will, you know, that some new leaders are in the making and are coming through who are going to not buy into that system and not buy into the power and the money structures of it and remain pure to, you know, their vision, really. So because
that would be quite a change.
Yeah, you get lots of inspiring people going into politics, but they kind of get shut down pretty mm-hmm. quickly, don't they?
Oh, so, most definitely. Or murdered.
Yeah, yes. I don't even want to think about that. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's some people who will preserve their power at all cost. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, we can't focus on that, because what that brings up then is fear and despair, and it paralyzes us. So, you know, I think, like you said, we've got to return to finding in ourselves and in the what we're doing around us inspiring things, which, you know, they do say enthusiasm is one of the most powerful energies in the world. And I believe that, you know,
you
meet an enthusiastic person, there's nothing better, is there?
It seems that part of being enthusiastic has to do with connecting to your soul's purpose, and also in leading an authentic life rather than an inauthentic one, so that what you're pursuing is coming from your authentic or true self and is more or less selfless, in that the only interest is in experiencing and manifesting the very best that you can manifest and sharing it with other people. And when
Pallas Athena is actually really a wonderful archetype for that, because she's very ambitious and she has quite a ruthless side. And I think, you know, for those of us on a spiritual path, we have to have a ruthless streak to bring our work into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And often, you know, like being an astrologer, for example, brings up lots of different reactions in people. You know, from people expecting you to predict the plumbing going wrong. To people who just think you're completely kind of bonkers, you know. So Pallas Athena, essentially, she helps us bring our inner work into the outer world, and so that our work is actually a reflection of our kind of deepest desires and what really motivates us. And when we're in that flow, you know, we can be enormously successful against all odds, really. And, you know, so many people who I see, one of the things they're struggling with a lot is they're in survival mode. So they're doing jobs, they're kind of pottering along, but they're not really happy with what they're doing. But they're doing it because they feel like that they need to do that to survive. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a huge other quantum leap we have to make is that, you know, that there's a much better way to survive or to thrive even than to be giving our joy away, I guess, to this bigger kind of big system that eats human souls alive, you know.
Right.
That started with the Industrial Revolution, really, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if we think about the Industrial Revolution, how on earth have they managed to convince us that this is a good idea?
Brainwashing.
Really, it's very
propaganda.
Bad for your health.
Lies, manipulation, distortion, television.
Yeah, absolutely. It's taken quite a long time for them to convince us. So, but the more right-brained we become, the more intelligent we become, and we less kind of, you know, we're going into the year of the sheep, actually. So I'm not going to say we're going to become like sheep, because I think sheep are pretty amazing.
Well, but we're already called sheeple, so we need to move out of that paradigm.
Yeah, but, you know,
because
when
we're
meet
not.
Someone
we're...
who's, say, when you meet someone whose right brain is very active, you know, they have a lot of creative solutions, and creativity, I feel very strongly, is the essence of flourishing and abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to change our ideas about what we need as well, you know, because we think we need an awful lot more than we actually do need. I'm not one that's to say we should all live in poverty, but we, you know, when our desire for things is kind of making us unhappy and unhealthy, we have to kind of look at whether the things we desire are really necessary, and will they bring us happiness or not?
Right, and you know, over here in America, of course, we have big box stores like Walmart and, you know, other stores that sell cheap goodies. And people will line up for these big sales, you know, that occur once or twice a year. And they will literally run through the door and knock each other down, and people have actually died by people trampling over them to get to the sale items that they wanted to get. And so,
unfortunately, Britain has now, they've caught on to this Black Friday.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
It's the same here, you know, and I mean, when you get that, it's people really entrenched in survival mode.
Oh, yeah.
That they would kind of do that.
Well, that's a lot of attachment and a lot of attachment to things and identification with things. And I think it was Buddha that said to walk the middle path and to not be attached. And, you know, I try to live by the philosophy that I always have what I need and more than enough to survive and to live. And it's meager, but it's absolutely all I need. And if I, as long as I think that way, everything seems to be provided. But the moment I think that I need to have something else, then that is a projection that requires energy and takes me away from being content and balanced and not having to be torn every moment with, you know, I want this and I want that. And, you know, at some point you kind of have to give that all up.
Yeah, I think so. And in some ways it gives you up.
Right. I mean, you know, it's a grind. It's like we can't really, we're like a rat in a maze or what are those little animals that are on a wheel? Anyway, you know, we're just on that wheel, and I don't like being on the wheel. I mean, I'd rather be sitting around sipping some tea or coffee or something and having a little crumpet. And
you sound almost British.
I'm sure I have some British. I actually have Welsh blood in me.
Oh, do you?
Yes, I do. And I think I have a little queen in me, too. But that's another story. But seriously, you know, just sitting outside and watching nature and seeing the hummingbirds feed and just taking joy in the delight of other things that just surprise you, like insects and birds and trees and the wind and the sound of water. And fortunately, I live in the country, so I do get to experience quiet, relative quiet, and fairly minimal. There's not too much street lighting, so it's fairly nice. But I don't know how people live who live in cities survive, because it's just a land of distraction.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge sensory overload, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I had a dream the other night about a wonderful city, and it was so different to the cities we have now. And in the morning, there was lots of temples, and everyone went into the temples to start their day, and you know, they were doing sort of a sacred ritual to start the day, and then they would go off to their different work, whatever that was. But the city felt so light, and I did get a sense that this is a city of the future.
Yes.
And, you know, that we could do cities completely differently.
Yes.
And we probably have in past civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
Done cities really differently, and thought about, you know, things like light and sound pollution. And I mean, as I said, I personally think the biggest mistake humanity has made is that we think we're cleverer than nature, even though we are nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't follow the laws of nature, and then, you know, we wonder why it all goes pear-shaped. We're doing the complete reverse of what nature does. There's a wonderful book about this scientist from the 1940s called Victor Skalberger. He was Austrian, and he wrote, his ancestors were foresters, and he developed the most wonderful science around water. and working with water. And of course, he was completely slated at the time. But I've read his book recently, and I think, you know, this is, if this was taught at school, we'd be, you know, children would emerge from school thinking completely differently about technology to the way they do now. You know, if we take out of the equation the powers that be who may stop that, actually that's a pretty easy thing to educate children in a different way or about different things. That's
have
a very
you,
good
have
book
you,
to look
have
up.
You heard of the Venus Project?
No, I haven't.
I can't remember the name of the man who came up with it. He's in his 70s or 80s now, but it's called the Venus Project. You can Google it.
Yeah.
And it's really innovative in terms of solving the world's needs based upon what is available. And it's really quite a beautiful vision, and it's, I don't see anything really terribly wrong about it, that it provides for everybody, and there are places where you can go to learn or to just do, basically you have more free time, and they're beautiful futuristic cities, and it's something that it's worth looking into. And now in Russia, they're building pyramids. They're actually constructing pyramids to experiment with the effect of the pyramid on food. One of them is for the effect on food. And they put crystals underneath, and there are sacred geometry configurations. And one of my friends who has gone to Egypt 20 or more times, she has said that the feeling in those pyramids is very similar to the vibration in the Great Pyramid that she often has meditations in. That's Carmen Bolter. She did the DVD series of The Pyramid Code.
Right, and, okay. Sounds fascinating.
And they're finding that the food, they don't allow any GMO food, of course, and they want to see if the food will nourish the children and create a more brilliant mind, and if it will, you know, if their cells, they're doing all kinds of testing and metaphysical research on it. I think they're way ahead of us. And
yes,
I really
do. I had a friend who was an energy healer who went out to Russia and Siberia quite a bit, and she said the scientists out there are doing amazing stuff because they're not all sucked into the system.
Right.
And so at the end of the Cold War, you know, they had nothing to do anymore. So they went off on this amazing path. You know, they're much more free to do whatever they want to do compared to scientists in Western countries.
Well,
and as a result, they, you know, their creativity is flourishing.
Oh yes,
they're
definitely
in their right brains. And
absolutely,
I totally feel that sacred geometry, you know, the sound that creates sacred geometry, you know, it's connected with our food, it's connected with our DNA, and when we have the sacred geometry and all of that working well in our bodies, you know, we're going to be like probably living a lot longer and being a lot more healthy, definitely,
and, more
and a lot more intelligent in a way that, you know, doesn't mean you're getting a university degree.
Right, exactly. The intuitive intelligence.
Intuitive intelligence, yeah.
Yes, the wisdom to know.
I really believe that, you know, I once had a wonderful meeting with an apple tree who communicated a very similar thing to what you've just said about the importance of the sacred geometry of food. And it makes sense that a pyramid would activate that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then they're going to have a pyramid for the leaders to absorb the energies and change their consciousness. And they're talking about a global pyramid project that's designed to stabilize the planet so that when we go through the there's supposed to be a very difficult period for the Earth when she goes through a certain period, a certain place in the universe. And by constructing pyramids in key places, it doesn't have to be in every country, they claim that that will balance the energy of the Earth and that we'll have minimal problems passing through this zone. I don't know what it is. It's not the, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's one of those shake and bake zones where the Earth could really, you know, she could
uncharted territory.
Yeah, she could get torn apart fairly easily. And of course, we're not doing much good by polluting the oceans and with uranium and oil and all the things that we're adding to it. It seems that all of those things, when we awaken more when we're more secure in our awakening, that we will be able to really address the things that need to stop in order for us to continue just living, let alone creating. Because we're not here to just live, and we're not here to just survive. We're not here to go to a job 9 to 5. If you don't like your job, quit. And don't, even if you don't know where you're going, just quit and sit at home and walk in the park and just spend time thinking with yourself. Spend time alone and let whatever you want, your creative juices flow into your body and through your body and tell you, you know, well, I really want to do this. And when you're really certain about it and it makes you happy, then you're on your road. You're on the road, and nothing can stop you, because that is about realizing our happiness, which is why we came here in the first place.
Yeah, and I think the linear left brain says, "Oh, I have to take action to get to my final point." With, you know, anyone who has tried out the doing nothing, sitting and having a crumpet and watching the birds sing and really getting to what it is you want, you know, it's amazing how you manifest the most magical things and things beyond what you could have possibly dreamed of when you allow yourself to pause and get into, I call it the yin zone.
Yes. And to be out
wait
of pattern.
For it to arrive rather than make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So much less stressful than, you know, this whole kind of goal orientated idea of how you
that's
go
terrible.
About things.
It's a road to death. Emotional and physical death, because you know what's going to happen every day of your life, and who wants to live like that? I like to live in the mystery, you know, of not knowing and being surprised along the road.
That is the goddess energy as I see it. She lives, you know, she's the invisible forces of the universe, and she is the mystery. She is the yin, and this is the balance, really, of the male and female, as I see it, is that we develop this mysterious yin side, and we allow ourselves to live spontaneously and yep. following our intuition
mm-hmm.
and, believing that our lives are important
and they
that
are.
They can be joyful and wonderful.
Well, and, before we get too close to the end of the show, I really wanted to ask you about, because I haven't been able to travel to the sacred sites, and I know you've done tours in celestial spots and sacred sites. What are some of the places you've been to, and what are your favorites? And maybe you can describe some of the experiences you've had there.
Well, actually, the going to them, it's a new thing for me. The first one that a group of us are going to is the Orkneys in March. But I can tell you a bit about that. There's these two very big stone circles. There's the Stones of Stenness, and they're a solar temple. Originally, they were 12 stones. And then you walk up this thin lithmus of land, and on each side are two huge locks. And then what they've discovered, the archaeologists, is that this was a journey into the underworld.
Mm.
And so a mile down this lithmus is the Ring of Brogar, which is absolutely enormous. Now, they've also discovered that these were the first Neolithic sites in Britain. And what's even more exciting is what they once thought was a hill between these two stones, they've uncovered this absolutely massive temple complex.
Oh.
And one of the things they've found there is what they think is possibly the first pyramid that
oh.
was ever built on the earth.
Wow.
And there's a lot of evidence, actually, that it all may have begun in the Orkneys, and then the pyramids were taken out to different places, the Americas and Egypt. Because
China.
Another very interesting thing is that the Orkneys and Stonehenge were abandoned, and very shortly afterwards the Egyptian civilization sprang up. And I think that's because they knew that Earth was going to get a comet hit, and so they left Britain and went to Egypt. And some of them probably went other places, but they knew that Britain was in a safe place to be for that cataclysmic event.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing, though, is that this very powerful total solar eclipse, it passes just over the north of Britain, so it's about 97% visible from the Orkneys. If you look at the landscape, it's like a big brain. You've got these two huge bodies of water, and then these temples in the center, which do seem to kind of correspond with different parts of the brain.
Mm.
And so going there, the eclipse is at the spring equinox, which is pretty amazing as well.
Wow.
So, I can come back and talk to you after we've been.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Like.
I'd love to hear about it.
So we're going to reenact this ancient ritual of the journey into the underworld, into the lunar temple, as she kind of eclipses, as the moon eclipses the sun. And I think it's just going to be absolutely awesome, the sacred marriage of the sun and the moon at this, if you look on YouTube, if you put in Neil Oliver and ancient Orkneys, there's a BBC program you can actually watch on this on YouTube, and it's just kind of mind-blowing, really. So,
What was the first
time to talk about the horses quickly as well?
Oh, yeah. Yes, please.
Okay. So I wanted to mention the horses because horses, well, one of the really interesting paths my astrology journey has taken me this year is connecting up with a horse whisperer. And she has this wonderful herd of those six horses in the herd. And horses are very right-brained, naturally. You know, they've evolved to be very right-brained. And so in terms of learning from nature, horses are a brilliant animal for us to be learning from. And they're incredibly insightful. You know, they can see into the soul of a human being and reflect back to you.
That's what I heard, that they can literally... that they literally can read you, read your mind, and they sense your moods, and they absolutely know what's going on with you.
They do. Anyway, we've done two of these Chiron workshops now, and we're doing some more this year. But what completely blew me away is that I knew that the horses would do their healing stuff. I mean, this herd are pretty amazing because I've experienced individual healing from horses, but I've never seen a herd work together.
Wow.
And they create, it's like they go into this altered state and they create this most amazing healing energy field together.
Wow.
But what then even blew me away even more is they started acting like planetary bodies. So rather than sort of coming directly up to people, they were all orbiting the edge of the round pen. And they were sending what I could only describe as extremely powerful distance healing, but they weren't very far away, you know, but they weren't kind of coming up to people. Uh-huh. And they were moving round. And it just completely blew me away because horses understand the way the universe works.
Yeah. I would say
understanding, which is, you know, just sort of mind-boggling, really. You know, it's like, oh, all these humans have come to talk about Chiron, and we were doing the orbit of Chiron past Saturn and Uranus the one time, and it was like they knew exactly what we were doing, and they just sprung into their, you know, into the altered state healing, but at this kind of elevated level. And I think that goes to show that when we open to the possibility of what other beings on the planet can give us, you know, it could go anywhere, couldn't it?
Quite amazing. Quite amazing.
Yeah. And I did want to mention my favorite pony. She's an A-class Welsh pony, actually.
Oh,
good.
She's
a very small pony. And she's white, and her name is Silver. And she's a very lunar. She's very lunar in these things. But she's a very Chiron horse because she has a very large melanoma under her tail.
Huh.
But since she got this melanoma, she's become a healing horse. Before that, apparently, she was quite stroppy. But she's lived with it for quite a long time. And I mean, she's an absolutely awesome healer. So it's interesting as well that, you know, a number of the horses in the herd actually have been wounded in some way, and this has brought out a healing side to them. So she's great. She refuses to go in a stable. She just wanders around.
Is she healing? Is she healing the melanoma?
Well, put it this way: the melanoma's not progressing.
Right.
It's staying still. And I mean, if you kind of communicate with her about it, she's like, well, I'm doing my work. You know, this is what I came here to do, and I'm doing my work. And when I finish doing my work, then maybe the melanoma will progress. But for the moment, so,
right.
So it's a bit like people who get cancer and then they go down a healing road and become healers themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and then the cancer doesn't progress then. So that's the Chiron. You know, we started off and what is Chiron about? Chiron is making our wounds into our gifts, really. Yeah.
And transformation.
Yes.
Transformation.
Very deep transformation.
We're taking our weaknesses and our fractured souls, and we are literally pulling ourselves together and healing ourselves. And once you heal yourself, then you can heal other people. Once you understand that it's very doable, that the body is a miraculous tool, and it knows what to do. And if you trust it, it will take care of you, and you don't need to refer to allopathic medicine and take lots of pills or undergo severe radiation or put things in your system that kill you, kill your body to kill the disease. I think that's a really outmoded method of dealing with things. And I think the idea of killing and enemies is going to be changing into working with the item that is causing a discomfort, and that we will work with it and possibly even befriend it.
Yeah, and I mean the mushrooms are amazing if you read their properties. You know, they inhibit tumor growth. They're anti-inflammatory, they're antibacterial, antiviral. And, one of the things with these huge changes in the electromagnetic field, there's a lot more active volcanoes now. And I think viruses and things like that, they are going to get worse possibly. But I think, the mushrooms are like a holistic approach to just building your immune system and becoming mushroom-like. And mushrooms have survived, two ice ages. They've survived all the comet hits on Earth, and so they are an amazing healing remedy that's there for us. And in America, you're lucky enough to have Fungi Perfecti, which is an amazing organization. And this guy, Paul Stamets, who is kind of the guru of mushrooms. He has a lovely orange mushroom hat, which anyone who wears a mushroom hat is a friend of mine.
Yeah, really. I agree with you on that one. Well, listen, Allison, we have just had such a wonderful chat that we are literally out of time.
Okay, thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, would you like to mention your email address in case people want to contact you for an astrological reading or to ask you questions?
Yeah, it's Astro Allison with one L, so Astro and then Allison @gmail.com. And that would be lovely. Get in touch.
Wonderful. Well, Allison, thank you so much for being on the show tonight, live from the UK. I absolutely love your energy, and I look forward to having another chat with you in the near future.
Okay, I love yours too.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. Good night.